The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to the Babylon Project podcast. This is, as always, Raul Wybera, and joined, as always, by my good friends Jim Arrowood and JP Harvey. How are you all tonight, gentlemen?
Well, I'm upright and taking nourishment.
And the weather here is good, so I can't complain.
Yeah. So, Jim, what episode have we got tonight?
Okay. We are on episode number 20 of the third season, and The Rock Cried Out. Quite an episode.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think that it was the full title, Rock Cried Out, No Hiding Place.
It is.
Ah, yes. The Rock Cried Out, No Hiding Place. Can you smell a little what The Rock is cooking?
Yeah, I was going to say that I don't think this was a WWE episode.
No.
The Rock Cried Out, No Hiding Place. Interesting title for a Babylon 5 episode, though. It's an old gospel song.
Mm-hmm.
So what does old gospel have to do with 300 years in the future?
I think we're going to find out.
Oh, we'll find out. Yeah. Find out. More ways than one.
Yeah, well, why don't we start it out then with a summary so we can find out.
Okie doke.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Centauri Minister Verini and Lord Rifa arrive on Babylon 5. Rifa is working hard to turn Verini against Londo, while Londo is doing the same against Rifa. Both houses are vying for power on Centauri Prime. Londo tells Veer that he has come up with a plot to get rid of Jakar once and for all and impress the Emperor. He tells Veer that he will lure Jakar back to the Narn homeworld by putting out the word that his former aide, Natoth, is being held in the basement of the headquarters of the defunct Narn government. Veer is sent to give this false information to Jakar, who seeks out Garibaldi to arrange passage to Narn for him. Veer is kidnapped by Lord Rifa, who uses a telepath to find out what Londo is up to. When Rifa is satisfied that he knows everything he needs to know, Londo rescues Veer and explains that this has all been a plot to get rid of Rifa, and that Jakar is in on it. When Jakar arrives on Narn, he is captured, entering the building by Rifa and a few Centauri guards. Unknown to Rifa, the guards are in the employ of Londo and leave Rifa alone with several angry Narn, including Jakar, who shows a holographic message from Londo telling everyone that he is taking revenge for the deaths of Adira and Prime Minister Malachi. Further, he shows Jakar documents that prove that Rifa, not Londo, is responsible for the mass driver attack on Narn, and that Rifa is further responsible for the death of millions of Narn citizens in concentration camps. In his message, Londo explains that he has arranged for the release of about 2,000 Narn from prisons and will have another 2,000 released once Rifa is dead. Jakar plants documents on Reefa to show false proof that he was working with the Narn Resistance. Reefa is brutally killed. Sheridan worries about the seemingly random nature of the shadow attacks as a group of religious leaders arrive from Earth. They have been collecting messages for the station, both open and covert. Reverend Dexter suggests that Sheridan share his concerns with Delenn. Sheridan and Dexter talk about the shadow attacks, and together they figure out that the shadows are herding refugees into a particular part of space to wipe them out in one huge attack. Delenn takes Sheridan out on the White Star and shows him an entire fleet of White Stars manned by Rangers. Well, there it is.
Oh, you make that sound so casual. Yeah, and this is going to be, folks, anything but.
Yeah, big time.
Character files opened.
There's a lot of people visiting the show for this one, it sounds like.
This is a really big episode for guest stars.
Mm-hmm.
We start out with Eric Avari as Rabbi Leo Myers.
Right.
And this is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He has credits back to 1962. And I have to say, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the most recognizable faces on television. He's that person that, oh yeah, that guy kind of face.
I remember him from Stargate. I remember him from The Mummy. I remember him from Warehouse 13.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling if I kind of dug through, I would find a whole lot of other stuff I saw him in.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes probably without even realizing it.
Yeah. Very recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have William Forward returning for his last of 6 appearances on Babylon 5. Poor guy.
But folks, you know, so at least don't worry, we will have some closure for him.
Oh, yeah, some closure. Okay, Louis Turin as Brother Theo returns, and this is his last of 5 appearances on Babylon 5, which kind of makes me sad. I like this guy.
That, yeah. I would have loved to have seen a lot more with him.
Yeah. We have Mel Winkler as Reverend William Dexter. His only appearance on Babylon 5, and he has credits back to 1969. Now, if we read all the shows these guys were on, we would that would be an hour. We'd have to make this a 2-3-part episode. So,
yeah, I didn't. He does not look that old, though.
Well, of course, that's 25 years ago.
this is true.
Or 20 some odd years.
This is true.
So. Yeah, I'm sure he looks a little different today. Under co-starring, we have Francois Giraudet as Minister Verini, also his only appearance on Babylon 5. We have Paul Keith as Drigo, only appearance on Babylon 5, credits back to 1966.
Okay, which one was Drigo?
Well, I think he was the telepath.
Ah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure. And then we have, last but not least, featuring Wayne Alexander as Jadan, second of 12 appearances on Babylon 5 in numerous roles, and he also appears in 2 TV movies.
And we have one more guest, don't we?
You missed one.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. There is one more. Marva Hicks as the singer. Her only appearance on Babylon 5, she is also a composer. And she
is a singer.
Yes. And she played T'Pel on Star Trek Voyager. She appeared as Tuvok's wife.
Okay. And I remember her on Daredevil.
Daredevil.
The Netflix show?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't watch that.
Daredevil, I thought, was actually good.
I'm sure it is, but there's only so many hours in a day. So I have to be really picky about TV.
Initiating. Plot analysis.
Oh, well, this episode opens with Z minus 14.
Yeah.
Z minus, not T minus. So.
Yeah.
What does that
mean? And what happens in 14 days?
Yeah, there's going to be 14 days and something's going to happen.
Yep. Now, interestingly enough, from show timeline, you know, airing dates, this is 2 weeks before the finale.
Mm-hmm.
So he's certainly giving us a hint there. And of course, the fandom figured that one out real quick. Yeah, it's got to be Zaha Doom. So something big is going to happen with Zaha Doom in a couple weeks.
Uh-huh.
Right in time for the finale. By the way, keep in mind the 14 here. Everyone thinks about these shows and they really don't get a sense of the passage of time. Straczynski gives us a sense of that time passage at the end of the show.
Yes.
Yeah, so this isn't just a few hours of showtime, you know, events, a few hours of events in the show. We get a good summary, just getting us caught up on the season in a way, I think. Sheridan sending telepaths to help the league. He's looking stressed out. Well, actually, Susan gives us a monologue that summarizes it, and you'd much rather hear her than me.
Indira, Magda, you're with the Pachmara? Sorry, try not to drink the water. Nakari, you're going to be rendezvousing with the Narn Resistance in Sector 40. Thanks. Glendora.
Commander's personal log, December 7th, 2260. We're shipping our telepaths as fast as we can to the races that have signed on against the Shadows. Upon arrival, they'll be assigned to warships already on patrol. Because the Shadow vessels are vulnerable to telepathic interference, we hope this will even up the odds a little. Sheridan's coordinating the defense with what's left of the League of Non-Aligned Worlds. He hardly ever leaves the war room anymore. He tries not to show it, but you can see the fatigue in his eyes. Franklin's still on walkabout. No one's seen him in over a week. We hope he's all right and works this through soon. We're going to need him back in Medlab. Though I don't share their belief, I'm glad to have Brother Theo and the rest of his monks on board. Ever since we broke away from Earth, they've been a wonderful, stabilizing force, working with people to keep them calm. How he can be so annoying one moment and so comforting the next is beyond me. A description which also applies to someone else I know.
I really don't see why this is such a difficult request, Commander. For every telepath you send to one of the other races, I send along one of my Narns as bodyguard. If their tactical value is as great as we suspect, shouldn't they be protected?
Their safety's already been guaranteed.
I'm sure that will be a great comfort to their grief-stricken families when a Shadow agent carves them up into spare body parts. With my people around, this will not happen. My Narns are willing to go into great danger, risk sacrificing themselves for you, knowing that in turn, we serve ourselves. If the symmetry were any more perfect, I should think one of us would break into tears.
I love that ending line.
Little bit dramatic.
Oh, gosh. Yep. And believe it or not, we still haven't finished setting up this episode. There's still more that's happening. Lando wants the Jakar situation dealt with. In fact, we find out he's going to ultimately try to use Veer to set up Jakar.
Yeah.
Or is he?
It's a little bit of misdirection, which is kind of neat, because you're anticipating, oh boy, here we go again, you know, just when it looks like that little rivalry is going to come to an end, and it seems like it's going to start boiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and someone remind me, because I was going to ask a question later, about what do we think is motivating Lando. Now, we know what you described, you know, from what Lando says, but I'm curious if there might be something more to that there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to the current line. Brother Theo, oh gosh, I am going to miss him. I did love that character in the show. But he's got some friends visiting.
Good afternoon, Commander.
Well, Theo, how are you?
Fine. Pay no attention to the sound you'll be hearing in a few moments. It's just the grinding of my teeth. Like tectonic plates.
Are you starting in already, Theo? I tell you, in 50 years of living and 40 years of serving the Lord, I have never met a sorrier soul than Brother Theo here.
Well, I wouldn't say
thank you, but I'd prefer to leave judgments as to the state of my soul to someone better qualified and perhaps a bit less loud.
But it says in the Bible to make a joyful noise unto the Lord.
I've heard you sing, Will, and take my word for it, that is not what the good Lord had in mind when he said a joyful noise.
Hello?
Neither is that.
Reverend William A. Dexter, head of the True Gospel Mission Baptist Church. Happy to meet you, Commander.
Nice to meet you.
And these are my associates, Mr. Chong, Rashid Abdul, and Rabbi Meyer.
It is a pleasure, Commander.
Well, thank you. Now, if you all just follow me, we've set up temporary quarters for each of you.
Temporary? Nice word, isn't it?
Those two guys are just awesome.
Yep. And obviously, you know, they go not, you know, they're not recent associates. They obviously go way, way back.
Yeah.
And the Muslim imam and the Jewish rabbi, apparently they've seen those two together before as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, you know, they know it's like, okay, as soon as those two get together, what's going to be coming, and they're just going to sit back and enjoy the show.
Yeah. Well, we don't hear anything from them. They don't have any speaking lines, and they just kind of fade. I don't think we see them.
Well, I think they show up for dinner.
Ah.
But you've got a Baptist, a Muslim, and a Jew working together with a Catholic priest.
I don't know about you, but it sounds like the opening line of a bad joke.
Oh, no. If it's not a bad joke, something compelling must be going on for all of those people to arrive at Babylon 5 together.
I don't think this is an ecumenical council.
No.
Oh.
Or it's a bad joke. We'll have to see.
Or it's a bad joke. A pastor, a priest, a Muslim, and a rabbi walked into a bar one day.
And the rock cried
out. A little
out.
Bit of misdirection going on here.
Yeah. Well, we switch over to the war room. You know, one of the things that I noticed in Susan's dialogue when we flashed over to Sheridan, he is kind of looking a little more disheveled than he was before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first thing you see is a 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
So he's been sitting there a while.
And his clean military grade haircut that he had earlier isn't anymore.
Like Susan said, he looks tired. He looks tired.
Yep.
Well, and he's feeling the pressure.
Yeah. Or as Dylan puts it, grumpy.
Grumpy.
You got that, Jim?
I got it.
Ivanova sent me to find you. She said you haven't been sleeping, that you have barely been eating. She said that you have been, in her words, carrying on cranky. I looked up the word cranky. It said grouchy. I looked up grouchy. It said crotchety. No wonder you have such an eccentric culture. None of your words have their own meanings. You have to look up one word to understand another. It never ends.
Something here doesn't make sense.
That is what I thought when I came across crotchety. This cannot be a real word, I said.
The shadows keep attacking random targets. Very illogical. On the other hand, once engaged, their tactics are very successful, very logical. It's a contradiction.
Unless the random attacks are logical in some way we haven't yet determined.
Exactly.
So, you have been sitting here trying to think illogically about logical possibilities, or logically about illogical possibilities.
Yes.
Well, no wonder you are cranky. Grouchy. Never mind. Your face just broke the language barrier.
I'm tired. I haven't had a good night's sleep since Kosh died. Having the kind of nightmares make your hair stand on end.
Well, that would explain the Centauri. You need food and rest.
Yeah.
The humans who you've been waiting for have arrived and would like to have dinner.
No, I don't have time. If they want to come here,
so
then that's
I told them yes.
Delenn
Since Minbari do not lie except to save another, my reputation is now at stake. If you say no, I will be publicly dishonored.
You don't fight fair.
True. Dinner is in 2 standard hours. I will see you there.
Pain in the butt.
Grouch.
You got it all the way through the end of that. That's awesome.
Well, and thanks to an earlier episode, at least Delenn knows what a butt is.
Right, right.
You know, some of the funniest lines in the series are Delenn struggling with Earth English.
Well, you know, every time she does, though, it seems more tongue-in-cheek than anything else. And, of course, when Sheridan says, makes your hair stand on end, I always think back to that episode where she was having the really, really bad hair day.
Oh, God. Oh, God. That's totally true. Great point there. Yeah. Moving on, Reefa's now on the station.
Yes, the new Prince of Darkness has returned.
So there's definitely something up.
And it's not good.
Yeah, obviously this is going to connect somehow with what Londo's putting together.
Yeah.
Well, Veer's ordered, or I guess threatened more like, to tell Jakar that Natoth is alive and in danger. Basically a total lie. And, you know, when I say threatens Veer, Londo gets really nasty about this one.
Right.
I mean, we're talking Game of Thrones level threats.
At this point, though, we don't actually know what Londo is up to. So.
Yeah. Well, and as this gets ugly, Londo appears to be acting just like we would expect him to act, given the level that he's fallen to in the last handful of episodes. He's really took that deep dive, and now look how vicious he is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he's making quite a comeback, though. You know, he's somewhat mellowed. You know, he's not hanging around with Morden as much. And we do know also, though, that the last time that Londo did talk to Morden, it was gloves off.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell at this point what is going through Londo's mind.
Yeah.
It really looks to the audience like he's gone off the deep end here. Mm. We've got a senior minister, and this kind of gives you a bit of a nudge here. We've got a senior minister with Reefa on his visit, and it seems that he's there on a mission to end the competition between the two houses. Apparently, it's causing a bit of trouble at the Centauri homeworld. It's disruptive.
Right. Two historically aligned houses, right? Which I'm sure is pillar or a basis of strength for lesser houses, and now these two are bickering or even on the cusp of war.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you know that senior minister, Verini, he does not care one way or the other how the chips fall on this. He just wants it ended.
Yeah. While this is going on, Veer does his deed, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And was it me, or did Jakar almost seem to be expecting Veer to show up?
Yeah.
The door, he shows up almost before Veer can finish asking to talk to Jakar.
Well, the door guard was unresponsive to Veer. He just stood there.
Well, Veer is mostly harmless.
For now. But like you said, the minister and emperor have no preference. They just wanted to end. Actually, it's not so much they wanted to end. They make it clear that it will end. And Londo suggests that not only will it be ended, but he will take care of something that's been an embarrassment to the Centauri for some time.
Yeah, both of them are vying for a inside track on this thing, but I don't know. Reefa's, he maybe has power at home, but mm-hmm. Londo is hungry, shall we say.
Yeah. Or as my wife tends to put it, describing our son, hangry. Hungry and angry. while this is happening, Veer comes in and, yeah, his kind of gets it to the idea to Londo that the deed's done. So it's really given a strong implication that embarrassment that's going to be dealt with is Jakar.
Absolutely.
Now, usually when something's that obvious, it's not. So.
Yeah. It wouldn't be much of a show if it was obvious and we knew it.
And yeah. That easy. Mm-hmm. But as Londo tells V afterwards, because Veer is more than a little upset here at this point, you don't understand, but you will.
And what does he say to Veer? You're young.
Yeah.
But I would add, while he's young, he's also pretty wise. Mm-hmm.
Well, Veer has seen a lot.
Yes.
And, you know, we've witnessed a lot of it right next to him, and not all of it has been good. Well, as a matter of fact, very little of it has mm-hmm. been good.
Over dinner, switching on to what else has been going on, we find out the brothers steal his little task force, his group of friends, is actually a spy network.
Yeah. So they're visiting the station and calling it a mission trip,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a religious mission they're necessarily
right.
on.
They pass a data crystal full of information hidden in a Bible. Was it in a Bible or was it from the Jewish priest and hidden in a Torah?
I didn't notice.
No.
No, it was Brother Will's, right?
Yeah, that was Reverend Will's Bible that had a big chunk cut out of it.
And here I thought they were just there to harass their brother.
Well. Yeah.
Well, there's a little more of that to come yet, too.
Oh, yeah. On the main story, Jakar is wanting something smuggled back to Narn, and I like the way he describes how big it is.
Yeah.
This tall and this wide?
Yeah, and measuring himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in order to deal with what he describes as a personal matter.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, we still think that, okay, now Veer's planted the seeds and he's going to go back and try to rescue
yep.
Natoth.
Just as planned. And mm-hmm. one wonders if some other people might be interested in this. And sure enough, we don't get very far on that question before Veer's kidnapped and kidnapped by Reefa's people.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Stephen First played that great. I mean, I was afraid for him
mm-hmm.
the way he played it. I mean, that was absolute
oh,
terror.
Oh, yeah. And gosh, wait till it comes. What do we get to the next scene in a couple minutes here? He takes it up another notch or so. He does a great job as far as being able to do some real dramatic work. We're used to seeing him as comic relief, and mm-hmm. he's absolutely not in this case. Actually, I'd go farther enough and say, in some ways, Reefa is almost more comic relief than Veer.
Yeah,
we'll discuss that one later. in the meantime, Reverend Will is going to hold a church meeting. Missionary Baptist style.
Yeah, I love Brother Theo's reaction on this one.
I was thinking about our conversation earlier this evening. Now, before I leave, I would like to hold an open church meeting. Show the aliens around here something other than our... Well...
He seems to think that if he does not say my name, I will not know he's referring to me. I can only assume that someone has been spray-painting the word idiot on my back again.
I think it's a great idea. We're a little tight for space right now, but we could use the chapel.
Just tell me it'll be a nice, quiet, dignified prayer service.
Theo, folks around here need all the joy they can get, and I intend to give it to them.
Oh, rapture.
Brother.
Oh, yeah. Rapture. I love it.
Lord, take me home, right?
Yeah.
Spare me.
So they've completed their primary mission, and now they're going to go on to their secondary mission, holding a little prayer service or whatever. And that exchange with Sheridan in there was a little awkward to me. Mm-hmm. You know, we're kind of cramped for space, but we're going to use the chapel. Well, duh.
Isn't that what it's for?
I think it was more than anything an excuse for Reverend Will and Brother Theo to indulge.
Oh, man. So Sheridan's an instigator, you're saying?
Oh, I'm not saying that. I mean, you're free to take the suggestion, but back to what Jim was saying as far as Stephen First's performance. Reefa uses a Centauri telepath to quite literally rip the information out of Veer's head. And I'll tell you, mm-hmm. that was a creepy scene.
Yeah, he shows some good acting chops in this one.
I couldn't tell, too, and this is a good thing, I couldn't tell when he was acting if he was showing that this physically hurt him, like a headache, or it hurt him that he was compulsively betraying a secret, or more likely, in my mind, both. It hurt him physically to have this happen, and it broke his heart that he was betraying an oath that he took, essentially, a promise.
Mm-hmm.
I think you nailed it there.
And it was awesome. I mean, horrible, but...
Mm-hmm.
And like Jim said earlier, you feel it.
Yeah, it was believable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we got Sheridan sitting alone.
At least he's not in the war room for once.
Yeah, he's kicked back a little bit, and Reverend Will shows up and starts talking about old age issues, which I can definitely relate to.
Hey, and it's a well-deserved lecture here about overwork and not accepting help. I've been down that path, maybe not in a military context, but I get that one.
Oh, it's a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm concerned. I mean, it's not a matter of being overworked and not accepting help. It's being overworked because I can't get any help.
And I like the way he makes the distinction between sharing the work and sharing the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned well-deserved, too. It's neat to watch Sheridan go from, I don't want to talk about this, mm-hmm. to... You see it on his face, like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know what? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're telling me something I need to hear.
Well, yeah, he needs to talk about it. He's just way too wrapped up in what's going on.
And I like the way Reverend Will points out that after God created man, he created Eve, telling mm-hmm. him to work with Sheridan. Though you start to see the light coming on in his eyes, and at that point Sheridan gets as Delin's word, grouchy about the idea. And it's a great dialogue. Do you happen to have that for us?
Let's
go for it.
She loves you, you know. I saw it in her face at dinner every time she looked at you.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Of course. I was just...
Delenn's been through a lot lately. We all have. She's got enough problems on her hands without giving her mine as well. Thank you for your concern, Reverend.
You know, before I got married, Emily used to come by sometimes and help me clean out my apartment. Well, I asked her, how come you're so eager to help clean up my place when your place is just as bad? She said... Because cleaning up your place helps me to forget what a mess I've made of mine. And when I sweep my floor, all I've done is sweep my floor. But when I help you clean up your place, I am helping you. Of course, the way I live back then, sometimes the mess was too much for both of us, but it sure was nice to have the company.
Great, great advice.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, in this scene, I was a little upset with Sheridan for the way he went off on the Reverend. And then after I thought about it for a while, okay, he's under a lot of pressure and everything, and he may have overreacted.
He definitely overreacted.
Yeah, but you see, and then the Reverend, this isn't his first rodeo, I thought it was really neat because he seemed to recognize that.
Yep.
And come up with just the right thing to say.
You got it.
I don't want to talk about this. Oh, of course. You know, or whatever the reaction was, awesome. I understand.
You don't have to talk about it. You can listen.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And speaking of messes, we for the first time see the Narn homeworld. At least I believe it's the first time.
Oh, man, it looks like Nevada. Huh? Who said that?
Yeah.
It's funny because it's true.
No, actually, what is the place? It's kind of, was it north? Is it? It was one of the Anasazi sites. The rock and the stonework is this, at points, if the sun hits it right, almost a blood red.
Yeah, I don't know the name.
If you know where I'm talking about.
Yes. Yes, I do.
That's what the Narn homeworld looks like. I've been out there before, and except not so much dust.
Right.
And not so much devastation.
Narn is a mess.
Well, and he said, was it Jakar or the other guy that said that the dust is going to be falling out of the sky for years and years to come? So I wonder if the planet isn't colder than it should be. And
I thought they implied that, actually.
Yeah, because if we assume that Jakar and the Narn are evolved from reptiles, then they would need that warmth in the atmosphere in order to thermoregulate themselves. And it's got to be really miserable if it's, you know, if you're having a nuclear winter.
Yeah, well, bear in mind, this was asteroid bombardment, and asteroids do a lot more damage than nuclear weapons. I mean, if you look at some of the energy releases that they're talking about there.
Well, sure. Just ask any dinosaur you happen to see.
Yeah. But Jakar apparently has a plan, one that apparently is quite dangerous, and that involves the underground tunnels.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because he's not raving about finding
the tunnel. But it kind of gives you the idea that that's what the plan is, or at least involves. Yeah.
Well, Verini is having a duplicate of the Centauri throne room built for Kartaja to make sure he's comfortable while he presides over the proceedings on Narn.
Of course, this might be one way of just simplifying some of the sets changes needed.
Oh, no doubt. But at the same time, we get the idea. You know, here we are. We're going to trap Jakar. We're going to bring Jakar before Kartaja, and we're going to kill him, and it'll feel just like home when they do it.
This is actually setting up a lot of events in season 4. We're going to see more of Narn coming up, but we'll be seeing a lot of ways from the context of the throne room. So, Reefa is getting ready for Jakar.
Oh, yeah. Well, he looks like a possum that's eating a sweet potato, I'll tell you what.
His little diabolical plan is coming together nicely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And in fact, we're going to start seeing a lot of things coming together at this point. You know, as cranky as Sheridan was, it seems that he's taking Reverend Will's advice, talking to Delin. They figure out the shadow's pattern. Like, from the perspective that sounds like they're planning a massive strike, not against combatants, but against civilians. And Sheridan, his comment, well, that's what I do, kind of sets Delin totally off. I get the context. He's trying to think like the enemy, but she's having none of that.
I think she didn't expect it.
Nope.
Yeah.
If you got that, let's go ahead and play that.
Maybe this is as much about terror as it is about territory. When we've had wars back home, sometimes one side would leave a few areas of enemy territory undamaged. That way you'd get maximum results when you finally hit them with something big. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Dresden, San Diego.
We could be doing the same thing here, drawing in thousands of ships, escorts, and refugees from a dozen worlds in preparation for a major offensive.
It makes sense. It's what I'd do.
What?
Well, you know, if I were the bad guys, if I were them, the only way we're going to beat them is to think like them.
Think like them?
Yes.
No. You will come with me.
Well, no, wait. We just figured this out.
Reverend Dexter says you need some time away from this. Right now, I agree.
They'll end the battle for the war. They need me here. Today, the shadows. Tomorrow, the galaxy.
Yes, John. Of course, John. Whatever.
They'll end.
Just say yes, dear.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'm sure, JP, you can fill us in on this. I mean, isn't it wise to try to get into your enemy's head and
yes.
try to figure out what's going on in order to plan a defense?
Right.
Sun Tzu.
Yep. Yeah, that's a part of how we plan. Of course, a lot of that is assumption-based. Some of it is not assumption-based, but that's exactly what we do. It just doesn't happen in one man's head like it does in the show mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
But right, if you can figure out your enemy's strategy and their doctrine, then you can maneuver to get ahead of them or inside.
Yeah, and prevent a catastrophe in the process.
Right.
It just makes sense. And, you know, Delenn has been in enough battle that you would think she would recognize this as a valid philosophy.
Mm-hmm. I really think, she just didn't expect it. When he blurts that out, you know, watching the scene and watching her face was, I didn't expect this from you. This is
and
what
I think
I
it's
would
the
do.
Way he said it, not so much what he said. Mm-hmm. And remember, she's priestly cast. She's priest cast, not warrior cast. I don't think Narun would have had as much issue.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it almost seemed like he was thinking out loud, oh, well, it's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was almost flippant the way he said it.
Right. And to think that this is a mass extermination of civilians is what would have set her off so badly.
Yeah.
So there are a couple things you can do with this sort of thing where you're pushing non-combatants around. One of them is to get them to migrate into an area that's stable mm-hmm. that you want to make unstable. So you push them across the border, you push them into somebody else's territory, then they have to deal with all the refugees. In this case, the other tactic, or you could argue strategy, is to herd them, you know, think of a cattle dog or a sheepdog, dancing back and forth. You know, that behavior to somebody that doesn't know what that dog is doing looks pretty random, when in fact they're gathering the sheep into a tighter, or the cattle into a tighter area.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then what can you do? Take care right. of a lot of them at once.
Yeah.
And that's what we see here. You know, their random attacks were really the behavior of a sheepdog or a cattle dog pushing the herd together.
Mm-hmm.
Not to slaughter, you know, not that we slaughter herds of cattle in that way, but you put all these refugees into a single place and then you strike.
And that's
massive.
And it sounds like it's almost a combination of what you were saying. A, maximum death, and B, a refugee flood.
Right.
Just combined, it's like a win-win if you're trying to spread chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the random, the lack of a pattern just became a
right.
pattern. Or, you know, sometimes we'll say the lack of a signal, you know, certain
is
behaviors telegraph things. The lack of that, if it's normal, is uh-huh. a signal. It's cool that Straczynski, whether he intended to or not, kind of communicated that little lesson in this.
So did mm-hmm. you use Babylon 5 in any of your training when you were teaching?
No.
Stayed with the classics.
No. Yes. Yeah, we used a lot of video to supplement or augment the teaching, but a lot of it were classical, you know, classic war movies and to be honest, some Monty Python.
Jabberwocky okay. or Holy Grail?
Jim, this is where you need to chime in.
Yeah, I was.
Or this is going off the rails.
I was just going to say that We must have this discussion later, but so Jakar begins his mission.
And Londo rescues Veer personally.
That was kind of neat, you know, the classic thing. Guard goes out in the hall, and then you hear bang, and the guard falls in the room, and in walks Londo shaking his hand, his own hand, because he
but he did, so obviously he's got some feeling about what he did here. He didn't send someone to rescue Veer. He didn't send any of his agents. He went and took care of it himself.
Uh-huh. Well, all of Londo's people are on Narn.
And all of Reefa's people are still back on Centauri, our BAP 5. And speaking of Reefa, Jakar begins his mission. His mission does not last very long because, well, Reefa and his guards catch Jakar.
Mm-hmm. Just as planned,
just
right?
As planned. Everything is going as planned.
Reefa's having a good day.
Except. Delenn seems totally enwrapped by Reverend Will's sermon.
Yeah, well.
What a switch, huh?
She's never, I don't know if she's ever heard an Earth ceremony or not, but you know, I suppose it would be fascinating to her as part of the religious.
Oh, the contrast between I'm sure she's probably seen or attended one of Theo's sermons, but there's a big difference between a Catholic liturgical mass and one of the more charismatic denominations of Baptist faith.
What did Will say? These people need some joy, and I'm about to give it to them.
Yep.
Whether they want it or not.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and the thing is they had to hold this service. They had to hold this service. Otherwise, it would have looked kind of suspicious, them just going to Babylon 5 to say hi and leave. You know, that they had to be there for a reason. So I suppose it's kind of like a business trip where you go somewhere and you buy your plane ticket and get your motel and hand out a business card to somebody and, oh, okay, now I can deduct this entire trip because I've been doing business.
No, there might be a little of that, but don't forget, these guys, and I'm sure the other clerics with them were holding their service as well, and this is going to get, because there's been some real time passing here.
Oh, but it would.
They might
have been
be spies, but they're ministers. But they are still ministers. They've got a vocation first. So
yeah,
the guards don't seem all that cooperative back on Narn, do they?
Yeah. Who has actually caught whom?
Right. Is that quiet deference to Lord Reefa, or is it the foreshadowing has something a little more sinister?
Guess who has the answer to those questions? Jakar has a little message from Londo.
Lord Reefa, if you are seeing this message, it is because in a very few minutes you will be dead. I have made sure the guards assigned to you are loyal to House Molare. They will not obey you from this moment forward. You have taken from me that which I loved, Reefa. You also took the life of Prime Minister Malachi, a good and dear friend. You have inconvenienced me and threatened my position in the royal court and weakened our defenses by your constant warfare. None of which matters to Jakar or his associates. But I think they do care about what you have done to them, Reefa. Yes, I think they care about that a great deal.
Oh, please rise.
I have given Jakar documents which prove that you are the one who orchestrated the bombing of the Narn Homeworld against my advice. personally were involved in the creation of death camps and genetic cleansing programs. That you are personally responsible for the death of 5 or 6 million Nans. And I think they would like to thank you personally for your efforts.
You can't believe him. He's lying.
On the off chance that Shekar might not believe me, I have arranged for 2,000 Nans now in custody to be freed. Half in advance, half pending his cooperation. More than sufficient inducement, I think. You see, it is not enough for me to simply kill you, Rifa. I could do that at home or here. But through your death on Nan, I will discredit your house and all opposition in the royal court. Goodbye, Rifa.
Goodbye, Rifa.
Mm-hmm. You know, I like the way that the holographic Londo moves. It's a little out of sync with the setting. And it just adds to the mood of what's going on there in a way. Londo has set up Rifa. He's given him to the Narn. And it's not just destroy Rifa, but basically, he's doing to Rifa what he threatened to do to Veer at the beginning of the episode.
And by the way, I thought it's neat to watch Rifa go from kind of chuckling to himself, like, this is ridiculous, to saying, you can't believe this, or you can't believe him.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end saying, this is a mistake. And I thought, what a strange word to pick. This is a mistake. Not this is wrong or this is a lie. This is a mistake.
Yeah. It's like a refusal to believe.
Right.
And Rifa's the one that made it.
Right?
Yep.
Yes, sir. It is a mistake.
You were the one who made it.
He crossed Londo.
he's been crossing Londo for a long time.
Well, that's very true. Mm-hmm. However, he did the ultimate thing when he had Adira killed. And that was it. You know, that raised the stakes way too high, and Rifa was not going to get out of this unscathed.
Right. You notice he didn't need to rely on the shadows to exact his revenge either.
No, he did it all by himself. Mm-hmm. Well, him and Jakar.
Him and Jakar. And this gets back to what I was talking about with motivation. Was it simply revenge? Pure and simple, okay, revenge on Rifa. Adira was definitely what put him over the edge, you know, on that. But you look back to Londo at the bombing of Narn when he was drug along with that. And then, of course, the stuff that he had gotten from the Seer. I can't help but wonder if this might have been a first step of trying to start down some sort of a path of atonement.
Well, also, if you think back earlier in the episode, Londo had mentioned that he was falling out of favor in the court because of Rifa. So, you know, knowing what Cartesia is like, you don't want to fall out of favor because you could wind up as one of his morbid counsel on that desk.
Oh, God. Just folks, wait till we hit season 4 there.
Yeah.
Just around the corner.
And
so what does Rifa do?
Well,
he runs like hell.
He runs like hell. Right as they're doing the final song in the service after the altar call.
They're singing that song, No Hiding Place, and they're moving between these two scenes, and Rifa is in slow motion, no less.
Oh, Yeah.
In slow motion, no less, Reefa is running for his life, and he has nowhere to go. He has no hiding place.
Yep.
It was exciting. And it was scary.
It was creepy. It was brilliant. It was in some utterly disturbing ways. It was almost comic.
Yeah. And see, now, I don't know. Is there something wrong with me? Because at this point, despite everything that Reefa has done, everything that he is responsible for, I felt bad for him.
I only felt bad because he was unbelievably unaware of what was unfolding around him. But some of that's probably that arrogance that comes with the power that he had.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Reefa. Nobody's going to hurt me. You can't hurt me.
And his refusal to accept.
I don't know.
I mean, the whole time Londo was lecturing.
It bordered on torture, you know. I mean, he's being chased back and forth, and yes, he is responsible for the death of millions and the destruction of a planet and all these other things. So just kill him and be done with it and don't drag the suffering out. I think that's kind of why I felt bad. And I'll tell you what, somebody getting beaten to
death, it goes far beyond that. If you think about it, remember, they're planting the evidence that he was colluding with the Narn.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in a way that's believable. Whatever happened to Reefa, what's going to happen to his family and all of his relatives, everyone of his house, is going to be as bad or worse.
Yeah.
Well, we know he's caught. You know, he's running, and then he runs into a wall of, you know, opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know much more than he dies, or we assume that. It's a scene or so ahead when there's a statement made when they're presenting the data crystal about the condition that he was found in, and that's when it hits you just how gruesome that it was.
Yeah.
Or when it's confirmed anyway. You know, your imagination is left to be a little bit free up to that point when they make reference to his body.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hit, you know, and then my reaction was, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't just beat him. They didn't just kill him. You know, they tore him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for the head, so he could be identified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that crystal was covered in blood when it was handed over, and it was completely clear prior to that.
And you know what? The thing is, Reefa really was setting himself up to take the throne. He really was planning a coup, just not with the Narn. And while Londo is explaining all of this to Verini, Veer is standing there in the background looking like a nuclear bomb ready to go off. Shall we just say he's rather... Can I say pissed, or do I have to stay with honked off?
No, I don't care.
Okay. He is definitely rather pissed at Londo.
Veer is actually the one that's not real happy about this situation.
He's got good reason to.
Yeah. But, you know, as Londo explains, he knew that Reefa had brought a telepath along and wanted to make sure that Reefa got the right message. Yep. And so Veer got caught in the middle on this.
He was a pawn.
Oh, gosh, the way Londo phrases it, you're not important enough to kill.
Thanks, boss.
But, yeah.
I don't think that he meant that as an insult, though. You know, Veer has no power.
Right.
And you know, and that's obvious. Why would you kill Veer? What are you going to gain from killing
Veer?
You're
going to get sympathy for your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do wrap up on an upbeat note. Seems Delenn has a solution for John's bad thinking. She's got a little bit of a surprise. And let's just say that is a lot of white stars. And awe moment. we get their second first kiss.
Oh, bah.
First kiss again.
Get a room.
it's like, okay, yeah. The command deck, forget the command deck, the admiralty deck of a fleet for the, yeah, not very command appropriate, would you say, JP?
No. Nah, kind of discouraged. Actually prohibited.
I don't know. Kirk got away with it.
Well, he's Captain Kirk.
Right.
Well, that's true. That's true. Let's be careful, yeah, though, that we don't spark an argument about who's better, Kirk or Sheridan.
Oh, no. We like them both.
Yep. Yes.
So, yeah, by the way, if you want to subscribe to the 8.5 time theory, this could have been many of thousands of first kisses, even millions. All right, sorry.
Don't even go there. You don't know how rabid the DeLynn Sheridan shippers were.
Oh, boy.
But we close with another subtitle, Z minus 10 days.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we've had 4 days.
Right, passed. This wasn't just an afternoon on the station. This was 4 days. Mm-hmm. So they're going to, and actually, I think midway through, don't we see a Z minus 13, I think, at some point?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They are
right.
Really trying to get the idea out that there is something significant coming.
Yeah, well, they're definitely setting up for something here. Z minus 10 days. So we start out with Z minus 14 days. Now we end with Z minus 10 days and no explanation.
Imagine when this was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time.
Yeah, nobody would know.
No, you might get a few people that said, wait a second, I think I know what they're pointing at Zahedum, but most people probably didn't give it that much thought. Now, what's going to go on in 14 days?
Yeah, it would have been interesting to hear some of the conversations around the coffee pot.
Oh, it wasn't so much around the coffee pot. It was on Usenet. I was on the Usenet forums at the time, and oh, good heavens. We figured out the Z was Zahedum very quickly, but the conversation going on at the time were just, it was, everyone was just on the edge of their seat. Okay, so what's happening? What's happening? Is
and
there
what's going to
be a
to
huge
happen?
Attack on Zahedum? What's next?
Yeah.
And what is next?
What is next?
What is next?
What's next actually is the closing credits. And this is actually the second.
Touché.
This is actually the second episode of two where they don't close with the regular closing theme music. They close mm-hmm. this one out with the actual gospel song and the rock cried out.
Yes.
I don't think that's quite what JP meant, was it, when he asked?
No.
Yeah, teaser for what's next, because at this point
there's only two left.
We're two episodes from the end of the season and we know something big is coming. And if I was a first-time viewer or the first time seeing this after it was on TV and had the DVDs in front of me, I would probably watch the next episode or two.
Oh, yeah.
And go to bed late. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, this is one where you're about midway through. Actually, this is a binge-worthy second half.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have, and we have coming up episode number 21, the penultimate episode of season 3. Shadow Dancing.
Yeah, no BG songs here.
Good. Good. Okay.
It's, let's just say, right when everything seems to be coming together, we're going to see a huge rock thrown into the mix.
Oh, yeah. Yep, we get a fleet of various races. We get Franklin finishing his walkabout and finding exactly what he's looking for, but it isn't exactly what he expected.
Yep. And the show that show ends with the Shadows dropping a huge bomb. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've got next week. And yep. Might as well give the title for the final episode, because there's only one thing it could be at this point. We'll be wrapping up the season with Zahadoom.
Zahadoom. So, yeah. Well, I
Closing
think...
Closing thoughts?
quite the episode, especially compared with what we had the previous episode. It was... Well, some things got
Anyone
resolved.
Anyone who was honked off with Straczynski over Grey 17, let's just say he earned his forgiveness.
Well, yeah. You know something also that I think we're seeing is we're seeing a change in relationship between Londo and Jakar now.
I think we've seen, I think we've seen the first seed. And that's kind of where I was going to with my question. It's almost like he was offering him Reefa as an olive branch. This is the guy who's responsible for your world, not me.
Yeah, but Londo and Jakar, I don't think, will ever be friends. They may be allies, and they may associate with one another peacefully, but they'll never be able to call each other a friend.
I think up not to in, this point, what? Oh, sorry, Jim.
I was just going to say, not in the sense that we think of as friend.
Yeah, I think they've gone from two guys that are professional colleagues, I guess, and that they're ambassadors at the beginning,
yeah.
who have no respect or fondness or anything for each other, to two guys who now at least truly respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
Not friends. I agree.
Yeah,
but there's something new here, or something is cemented in place, it seems, that was just not there before. And that's they really seem to respect each other at this point.
I think at this point, there are different kinds of friendships. And this is a conversation that we're going to have, I think, at least two more times. At one point at some of the events in Season 4, and again at some of the events in Season 5. It's going to be an interesting conversation.
And there it is.
Well, what about Boom? Let's do the Boom assessment. Did we have any Boom today?
While Lord Reefa might think so, I think the biggest Boom was a charismatic side, more Pentecostal-oriented Southern Baptist revival meeting Boom.
Yep.
So no Boom today.
I guess it depends on your perspective. what do you say, JP?
Yeah, Boom for Reefa. Overall, not a lot of Boom. But we've already telegraphed that there's some big Boom coming up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what about tomorrow?
Yeah, there's always Boom
always
tomorrow.
Always Boom tomorrow. Yes. Good night, everyone. Say good
so
night,
long.
JP.
Good night, JP.
No hiding place.
Can't you see the old
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.